Spoilers and Fandom is like a book club for geeky stuff.
Join us as we delve into the depths of our backlogs and sift through the games, comics, shows, movies, and books that we haven't checked out yet.
Hey everyone, welcome to the next episode of Spoilers and Fandom.
Hey!
Today we're talking about the book by Isaac Asimov called The Gods Themselves.
Yeah.
But first, we should let you know, at the end of the show, what we will do is we will be rolling for movies, because I forgot to give you guys picks of what to vote on that we should watch next. So we're going to try something a little different. I've picked 6 movies, and we'll use an app to roll for what we should watch next.
A randomized roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll do my
poll. I think we'll put up a poll again
on
Hillary's Instagram, Twitter, as usual, for the 3 games that we'll play after that.
Yeah.
So you'll have like about 2 weeks to decide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Mm. So, yeah. And again, thank you guys for listening and for all the awesome feedback on the show.
Yeah.
We've received quite a lot of good messages. So thanks.
Thank you.
If you're listening. Yeah. So let's start. The Gods Themselves by Isaac Asimov.
This book, I've written the most... You know, I write notes for every episode that we do.
Yeah.
This specific one, I've written the most number of notes. It feels like I've done a whole essay on this. And I'm wondering whether I should put them up as, like, episode notes for guys to read them. I don't know. But there's... Okay, somewhat, there's a short section that's spoiler-free, but then the most of it is spoilers.
Yeah. So this book is really hard to talk about without spoilers, because there are twists.
Yeah.
There are some crazy twists.
But it's an interesting story. Like, I didn't expect it to be like this. I thought it was a short story at first.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So let me tell you about the audio version, because they go into details about how this guy ended up writing this book.
Uh-huh.
And so I've never heard of Isaac Asimov, by the way. Just... Uh-huh. A heads up. I'm a sci-fi fan, but this is blasphemy apparently. So, but I know him now. So, hey. So basically, the audio version starts with the narrator explaining why he wrote this book. And the reason is hilarious. So, in the 1970s or around then,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact date, he went to like a science fiction convention.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, where he was living at the time. Mm-hmm. And he went for one of the panels, which was being held by someone who he knew, like a close friend or a friend or acquaintance. And that guy was giving a talk on plutonium-18 whatever.
Yeah.
And that plutonium doesn't actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that guy made a mistake in his panel delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So after the show, Isaac Asimov approached his friend and he was like, you know, that plutonium doesn't exist. And that guy, you know, it was just like friendly banter. But Isaac Asimov, he was like, you know what? I'm going to write a short story about this, this substance just to screw with you or troll you or whatever. And that's how. So you started writing a short story.
Mm-hmm.
And then it eventually just became a bit too long, is what he says. It became like a full-on novel. So, but it wasn't ever intended to be a novel. It was just...
It was supposed to be...
It was just a short thing just for giggles with his friend, really, is how this book came about.
But that's...
So, yeah.
Because, like, now for me... I picked the book. I picked it thinking that it was going to be like a quick read, a short story.
Yeah.
But then as luck would have it.
Yeah.
It ended up being, I don't know, a bit more than it. A bit more than that. And then also for me, like, I'm coming from a place where I've had like a long like history with sci-fi and stuff.
Yeah.
So I've known of Asimov. I've known of like his contemporaries. Remember when I was telling you, like, right after I picked the book,
yeah,
you were saying you've never heard of this guy.
And then I was telling you,
yeah. Then I was telling you the way him and he had 2 friends,
yeah,
okay, 2 contemporaries, Arthur C. Clarke,
uh-huh.
who did 2001, mm-hmm. Space Odyssey, and another guy called Robert Heinlein, who uh-huh. did Starship Troopers. That's what I was telling you. From these three guys, sci-fi as we know it sprung up.
Yeah.
Basically. So they had all different styles and whatnot. But there was a thing where Asimov's work generally doesn't... He never really writes women that well. But now having looked at this, this is a bit of... I don't want to say it's a spoiler, but it's a bit of a thing to note.
I didn't have a problem with the women he wrote in this
exactly.
book.
Exactly. So it seems like...
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it was just him maybe not exercising that muscle. But he just... It seemed fine. Like, for me, it was fantastic. Yeah. And
yeah.
It won... This book won 2 awards back to back.
Really?
Yeah, it won the Nebula Award in 1972.
Yeah.
And the Hugo Award in 73.
Wow.
These are huge sci-fi, like, awards, literature awards. Huge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say that's... Okay, let's now we get into what basically the novel is about, like, really quickly.
Yeah, okay, so... Like, okay, let's just decide right now.
Yeah.
We do not go anywhere past hard things and soft things.
Yeah.
Okay? Because
yeah.
Everything to do with that and after that is a spoiler. If you don't know what we're talking about, it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah.
And if you do know what we're talking about, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So the book starts off with, like, these scientists who are chilling, and they one day magically discover... Well, not magically, but they discover, like, something in one of their containers. It was something... I forget what the chemical was. It was something starting with C. But it was a chemical, and then it changed into plutonium.
Or tungsten, yeah.
Yeah, plutonium 18 whatever.
186,
yeah. Yeah. And it just naturally changed to that. And the scientists were baffled over how it can be that, because that doesn't exist in our universe, right?
Yeah.
Hence the argument with his friend.
Yeah.
and they through lots of story and deliberation, they agree, or they somehow conclude
mm-hmm.
that this, because it happens, I think, more than once,
mm-hmm.
where that substance that they put in this place is changed into that material.
Yeah.
They agree that there is a parallel universe where physics is different.
Yeah.
Physics and chemistry is just different.
Yeah.
And they are sending stuff to our world in exchange for the stuff that is, you know, pathetic in our world to their world. Like, they're just swapping stuff. So people in the parallel universe are sending us this stuff, and they're in turn consuming whatever we send.
Yeah.
Like that useless substance that we send there.
Yeah.
So that's the conclusion. And then they send instructions for building a pump that does this automatically. Now, what this means is for the world, the energy crisis is solved. And and that's basically the gist. Now, the story starts off with a lot of politics.
Yeah. And
so
that can be daunting. Let me not lie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the scientific jabber is a bit daunting as well.
Yeah, but that's an Asimov staple. Anything you read of his tends to lean in a bit heavy on the sci-fi explanations. So it's a bit more hard than anything else.
Yeah. The way I read that, because I suck at chemistry, I do not know what they were talking about,
mm-hmm.
was just, haha, my scientific dick is bigger than yours. Haha.
Yeah.
Which is really all it was.
Yeah.
Like,
basically.
that's what the characters are literally arguing about. Ha ha ha. Ooh, ha ha. Like, you know, that's all you need to take, really. But there's a lot of politics. So the person who runs the lab that it was discovered ends up taking all the credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever was working on it with him didn't get any credit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, because the world's energy situation is sorted.
Yeah.
Right? And because this guy took credit for it, he's become like the most famous individual. He's super influential in the world of politics and just the world in general.
Yeah.
He's become one of the most influential characters. But some of the scientists are wondering, like they're asking questions about this pump. Like, for example, one of the scientists questions, like, are the Power Men, the people in the parallel universe, smarter than us?
Yeah.
Which no one wants to admit, especially this head guy.
This guy, yeah.
Even though they're the ones who sent the instruction, blah, blah, blah. And what is the downside? Like, is there a downside to this? No one wants to question that.
Yeah.
And one scientist in particular really, really feels like there is a downside to this. Mm. And he takes it upon himself to prove this guy wrong and to find flaws in this exchange of matter that's happening between the universes. Mm. And that the story just...
That's not the basic...
That's a basic gist of the story. Yeah. And it just goes crazy after that.
Yeah.
So, I can't get into more detail without spoiling it. But that's the plot. What did you think?
For me, I really liked the plot.
Yeah, I thought the plot was original.
Yeah.
And it's
real. It's something that you can picture.
I would say that the way it concluded right at the end...
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
I really loved how it ended.
Okay, yeah. It ended in a... I wouldn't think it ended.
He wrapped it up
in that.
Like, yeah,
it was like literally
end
of the story when it ends.
Yeah.
The twists, which we'll talk about later, I did not see coming at all. And when I was like, no. I was like, what? Yeah, but I'll talk about that in the spoiler part because I thought those bits were brilliant. There's like a lot of twists to such a simple plot.
Yeah.
And I really did like the politics. It was really, really...
Well...
Like, it's still...
It's well presented.
Nothing has changed as well.
Yeah.
Like,
and this was
in the
70s.
Yeah.
Okay, it was in the 70s, written about the year 2070. Because it's set in the future from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know whether... Okay, because you did the audiobook, right?
Yeah.
Did it do this thing where... Okay, because in the actual, like, the novel...
Yeah.
It starts in chapter 6. And then it keeps referring back to chapter 6. Between chapter 1 and 5, you'll have excerpts of chapter 6.
Yeah, they mentioned that at the start, that it was intentionally done that way.
Yeah, it's intentionally done that way. So it has like a non-standard order, like that.
But it didn't make a difference in the audiobook?
Yeah, because the things that you get from chapter 6 are treated almost like flashbacks or flash forwards. Because they'll just inform that bit of the story that you're reading. It's not that big of a deal.
I took it as the introduction, and it felt like that.
Yeah.
It felt like
chapter
6 was chapter 1, really.
Yeah, but every chapter between 1 and 5, between 1 and 6, has an excerpt of chapter 6 leading into it.
No, they didn't do that in the audiobook then.
Okay, then in the text,
in the audiobook,
that.
it just starts with straight up the stuff that goes on with the scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else after is other stuff.
Yeah. So in the novel, it goes back and forth a bit.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it informs the chapter that you're about to read.
Okay. No, there's nothing like that. And also, the audio recording, I forgot to say this, is only there because, like, it is really old. And it is hard to listen. And it's from cassettes.
Yeah.
And the only reason it exists is because of the law in the States where... literature needs to be converted into audio for people who can't read. So it was made for people like me, but it has not been updated since then. And it was, like he gave special permission, just heads up. He gave permission for them to do this for free. So that's why the audio version exists. But it's not got any of that. In fact, the audio version doesn't even say chapter this, chapter that, chapter that. It says change the side. And then...
What?
Yes, it says change the side. Change the side.
So it's legit
change
just...
Change the side.
It's legit
it says it like six or seven times and then continues.
So it's just been ripped from the tapes.
Yes. It's a direct rip from the tapes.
Okay.
And I was like, every time I stopped, I was like writing down...
Change the side.
No, I was like writing down the timestamp that I stopped with. Because YouTube does bookmark some stuff, but it doesn't always do it across devices as well. So you need to find the manual.
You found this.
So I was just writing down the timestamps.
Okay, cool.
And if you follow the Instagram for Spoilers and Fandom, you saw the timestamps that I was at. No, so sorry, I went off track. But yeah, the plot was really good. Mm-hmm. And for me, this plot was very much a Star Trek plot. Yeah. Because it just takes like these twists. It just goes into madness. Like it's really good. I mean madness in a good way, not an unbearable way. It's just a way I didn't see coming. I really like that. I really did like that. As well as like the, I guess, relevant issues that are going on like right now. Like they're talking about the energy crisis in the 1970s, which is still there now.
Yeah. They're talking about immigration, which is...
Yeah, which is still a thing. Yeah. Racism, cultural differences. Like, all this Star Trek nonsense is in this book. Yeah. Like, I really like even, that, yeah.
Like, for me now, as I was reading it, as someone who's only watched, let's say, how many? 3 episodes of Black Mirror?
Yeah.
This could have been an episode of Black Mirror. Not as dark as Black Mirror gets, but I wouldn't Star Trek is a closer reference.
Yeah, because it felt like easy to digest. I know that maybe the way we've talked about the plot, I guess, seems daunting or...
It's not. It may be word heavy, but it's not hard to understand.
It's just guys found something that produces energy.
Yeah.
And it's from another world, is what they conclude.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good plot because of the twist that we really can't talk about.
And, okay, now the way the story is called The Gods Themselves.
Yeah.
But the title is actually taken from a longer quote.
Yeah.
Which says, against stupidity, the gods themselves contend in vain.
Yeah.
So the book is actually separated into 3 parts. The first part is what Suji has just described. Mm-hmm. So those bunch of chapters are called Against Stupidity.
Okay.
Yeah, in the book, that's actually...
All right, cool, yeah.
Then The Gods Themselves begins now in the middle.
Yeah.
The hard and soft.
Right.
Then the last part, which wraps up everything, is called Contend in Vain. So it's the whole book, there's an overarching theme of the book, let me say that, which is based around that whole quote.
Yeah, and the name of the book makes sense right at the end.
Yeah.
In a very direct way, actually. which is dope, which I thought was really cool, that part. Mm. But yeah, I'll talk about it in the spoiler section, if I remember.
Yeah.
Because I tend to forget.
So yeah, even for me, I know I picked this book, but it was a bit hard for me to get through, the introduction. Because in my head, I kept on reading these bits for the politics and the academia, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt a bit, I didn't know what to feel. Because I was like, it's interesting, but this can't be all that this book is.
Yeah.
And then it takes another left turn. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
You'll end up sitting and reading this book for long blocks of time.
Basically, when that happened, I was like, holy.
Yeah.
I need to see where this goes.
By the way, you'll be hooked in and you won't know what to do. Because you'll have to sit and finish at least that section.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're basically, it's only 250 something pages, this book.
Yeah.
So it's your average Goosebumps.
Yeah. You can finish this book within a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah. For some, if you're fast readers, maybe even one sitting. It'll be hard, but they could do a whole day and do it in one sitting. But I wouldn't advise that. Take time.
Yeah. Based off of what you've said, I wouldn't recommend the audio either.
Mm-hmm.
It is really dated.
Yeah.
And like the tape, at least at the start in the first section, there are a few places where it sounds like there's deterioration, but not enough to like context will just let you know what happened. Oh. There's like a part where it's like a paragraph is skipped. Mm. But it doesn't take away anything. Like it doesn't seem like there's anything.
Unless now we try and check whether elsewhere somebody else somewhere.
No, I looked. There is no... This book needs a remaster. It really does.
So maybe I don't know. Maybe somebody will listen and be like, fine, let's actually do a remaster of this book.
I hope they do. Actually, it would do well. It's a good book.
They should give you the chance.
Oh, I just spoiled my verdict. I did like this book, if you can't tell.
they should give you a chance to do one of the voices in this book.
Yeah.
I'll tell you which one in the spoiler section.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's the plot.
Yeah.
The guy's writing.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find it?
Okay. No, I think you should start, because for you, this is your first introduction to
Asimov. Yeah, I've never read Asimov. Yeah. So I liked it.
Mm-hmm. But
the only thing is the science-y stuff that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That just flew over me, so I just kind of flew out of it. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the stuff was very easy.
Yeah.
It's very much like, I'm not going to say like Goosebumps,
mm-hmm.
but it's that level of ease with which you with read. It is not like hard to read like Steven Erikson's stuff.
Who's another sci-fi author maybe we can...
I would say it's amongst the easiest books that we've read on this podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
It's super easy.
Yeah.
And very direct and straightforward. So I really appreciate like writers who write like that.
Mm-hmm.
They just tell it how it is.
Mm-hmm.
When he did talk about chemicals, it was a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only a few times where it happens really.
Okay.
Like it's just twice or thrice maybe in the whole book. Okay. And it really doesn't amount to anything. It's just banter really.
Okay. And since I have all these notes, let me use them now.
Yeah.
Now for me, you'll have to forgive me this episode because I'm going to nerd out a bit.
Yeah.
I really, really like Isaac Asimov.
Right.
I really, really like Isaac Asimov. He's not my favorite sci-fi writer.
Yeah.
My favorite is actually Clarke, Arthur C. Clarke,
uh-huh.
the guy for 2001.
Uh-huh.
And these guys were friends.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of bleed into how these guys write.
Yeah.
But Asimov tended to be like this is going to fit closer maybe for you. He was the more rational writer.
Okay.
Yeah, he was like the center line. He tended to have like a clear, direct style of how to write.
Yeah.
But he also discussed maybe higher concepts and maybe sci-fi of the time.
Yeah.
So it was like, now he used to do like, his bigger stories are all space, time travel, futurism kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Parallel universes. But the criticism at the time was that he couldn't do women and he couldn't do aliens that well.
Asimov or Clarke?
Yeah, Asimov.
Okay.
Clarke, on the other hand, wrote more about space travel, exploration, futurism, basically where Star Trek is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's the more emotional of the three guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. His writing tended to inspire more. And as a result, the kind of stuff that he wrote about in his books are what technology is now.
Wow. Because
he wrote in his books about personal computers and carrying slates. Okay, like if you see in tablets. 2001.
Yeah.
Guys have slits at other personal computers. Now we have tablets, which is exactly what I'm reading of.
Yeah.
Bioengineering. He's the one who pioneered the idea that we'd have satellites for purely telecommunications and entertainment.
And voila.
And here we are. He was the more optimistic one.
Yeah.
But then now the third guy, Heinlein, he was the guy of now scientific accuracy. He was the proper nerd.
Okay.
Yeah. So he used to do aliens and women better than Asimov did. But now his story started.
I don't get it. What was wrong with the women? It's really curious now.
No, it's because
like,
of just,
is it like from a feminist perspective? Like what?
Both. Let's say kind of halfway. Let me just meet it halfway. Because, you know, now, sad to say, stories back in the day, no, they never used to focus on the women in the story. They just used to be either an accessory or the thing that they're going to save.
They
were never characters. They were never like fully fleshed out like that. They were just things or the quest.
Yo, in this book.
In this book.
The women are the MVPs, man.
Yeah.
Well, the one woman who's in this book is, well, you can argue,
okay, yeah, one.
You can argue about the other one. but yeah, the one woman in this book is the MVP, and she is almost written like a future feminist.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's really badass, yeah.
Yeah.
And she makes all men look dumb, really.
Yeah, in comparison.
Yeah.
And this is in reference to the person that she's actually next to in the book.
Yeah.
The person who she interacts with the most.
Yeah.
Is a chemist, a physicist.
Yeah.
And he looks dumb compared to her.
Yeah.
And she has none of his qualifications.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was, for me, if I found it amazing. I don't know. Maybe more guys need to read this.
Oh, I guess it's because of her style, like her upbringing.
Yeah, she didn't care that much.
There's a spoiler there, but yeah. No. I'll just say her upbringing gave her superpowers, really.
Yeah. So but, between now, Clark, Asimov, and Heinlein,
yeah,
those are the big three of hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
You'll hear guys, when you want guys, those the guys will say that they're old school sci-fi fans. Invariably, it'll be one of these three guys.
Okay.
Yeah. Who they'll say. So, but for me, my preference is Clark, and I really liked the story.
Yeah.
But even in that.
Yeah.
This is going to be aside.
Yeah.
This is just for the sci-fi fans out there. I want to recommend short stories from each of these three guys.
Yeah.
My personal choices.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether guys will resonate with them as much as they do with me, but this is just, if you just want to get like a crash course into how this guy writes, the kind of stuff that you get from them.
Mm-hmm.
For Asimov, this book is a good option. But if you don't have time to read the whole book, there's a short story called The Last Question.
Okay.
Super short. I think it's about 3 pages.
What?
Yeah, super short. Read that. That is classic Asimov. It's about... I really don't want to
spoil it. No, it's 3 pages. It's 3 pages. Pages. I don't think
I'm not spoiling anything.
Yeah.
Find it, read it if you're interested. You will love that book.
Yeah.
That story. For Clark, there's one story called The Sentinel.
Uh-huh.
Again, maybe about 5 to 6 pages. It's also not very long, but it's also classic Clark. One plus on this is that The Sentinel is what was eventually blown up into being 2001 and 2010 and like that.
Ah.
So the genesis of 2001 is that story called The Sentinel.
Huh.
Heinlein was a bit tricky, but the story that I liked of his wasn't even Starship Troopers. It's one called And He Built a Crooked House.
Okay.
Yeah, because he also took like titles from, what's it called, poems. So this one is called And He Built a Crooked House. This one I can give you like a small like tidbit. It's about an architect who built a house around the idea of a hypercube. Like, you know the way you can make a cube, but then you open it out, you'll get the net of a cube.
Yeah.
Basically how it looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this guy built a home on the net of a tesseract, which is a 4-dimensional cube.
Uh-huh.
But then there was an earthquake, and then the house collapsed in on itself, and it became an actual 4-dimensional house.
Huh.
Yeah. Go check it out. It's a story about an architect. It's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may be not be something that you're looking for, but it's also classic Heinlein.
Okay.
It's really interesting. So yeah, that's background nerd whatever stuff that you might like to know about.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know.
And I will say, Starship Troopers, the book, is apparently very different from the movie.
It is, yeah.
Like, stupidly different.
Yeah.
The
book is hard sci-fi. The movie is just an action movie.
I love the movie.
the movie is dope.
Yeah.
But if you've read the book and then you go to the movie, there's some disconnect that you might not be ready for.
Yeah, it's very, very different.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess... Okay, what you said you liked the book.
Yeah, I definitely like this book, yeah.
We have to score it.
Wait. We've talked about the plot, the writing.
The characters. We haven't talked about the characters. It doesn't have that many characters.
My favorite characters are spoilers. Okay. I guess between the parts that we've talked about, the scientists, my favorite character would be... You know, I actually liked Hallam at first.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the start.
Yeah.
When he started becoming more and more of a dick, I'm like...
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked... you know the Russian dude? I forgot his name. Kowalski? The linguistics guy.
Yeah.
The guy who's trying to translate the language from the parallel universe.
Yeah, Brunowski.
Brunowski? Kowalski? Yeah, I don't know. But yeah. Sorry if that's... I just don't remember the name. But
that's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked him. From the start. Yeah.
Okay. Now for me...
He's not my favorite character, but yeah, I did like him.
I liked... There's a character in the start who you see. Who's he explained for. And I liked him, but then the story veered away from him pretty quickly. And I was like, Denison.
Ah, yeah.
And I was like, why? But then later on, my favorite character is actually a spoiler character.
Yeah.
But I really like Denison.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess that's it.
What would you score?
7 out of 10.
A 7?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. That's actually high for you.
There's no way I was going to give it a 6. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like 7. It loses points for me because of the way it ends. Specifically... There are some questions that I have about characters that are not answered.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's left that way, I guess, intentionally. But I really, really wanted to know.
Okay.
Specifically, there's a character called Estwald.
Mm.
Who I get no conclusion about. and there's such a big twist with him as well. But... I say him, but anyway, like there's Estwald, who I have no idea about. There's also the way it wraps up everything. It felt like Asimov was like, okay, this was a short story. This was like a piss take. I need to wrap this up, and it ends that way.
Yeah.
It's like that when you're watching an anime. That last two episodes suddenly just wrap everything up like that. And like, how? Like, yeah. It's a bit like that without it needing to go into another season. Like, it just ended.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, yeah. And also, I was going to minus a point as well for the audio quality, but leave it.
Oh, yeah, because it is old.
The audio quality is really bad. Yeah,
it is old, and that's going to be an issue for guys who do want to listen to audiobooks. It's going to be that much harder to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the States, where you have access to the library of... I don't remember what.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you'd have access to these resources, I guess.
Okay.
But yeah, 7 for me.
I almost wanted to give it a 9.
Wow.
But then
that's high. Yeah, that's really high.
But then I also realized that I did have issues with it in the beginning.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
Who picked the book in the first place.
Yeah.
So because of the pacing of how it is in the beginning, it's going to take some adjustment.
Yeah.
But beyond that, once you do adjust to how Asimov writes, and you adjust to... what the story is, just take it in. Don't think too hard, just take it in. You will land in a very good place. And it'll make you think. It'll make you even question a couple of things.
Yeah.
So I want to give it I give it an 8. Because it's a good novel.
Yeah.
It's a good story. I really liked it.
Yeah. I'd definitely recommend it.
Yeah. And I'd also definitely recommend it. And I'd hope that maybe this would have been shot in some way, maybe in a movie or
an This could make a very easy well.
It'll be weird.
I don't know how you'd translate some of the things into a movie. Specifically, one particular section of the movie. I don't see how that would translate. Lots of CG, I guess.
Yeah.
But, man. Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, I get all that pacing is a real thing. Because the start of the book is... very, very slow.
Yeah.
It is very slow with the scientist politics and stuff. But when you hit that left turn
yeah.
into what the hell, really?
it'll hook
it, you. It just got me from there. I couldn't stop. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll give it. It would have a 9 if the beginning was as compelling as the rest of the book is.
Okay.
But because of that, mm-hmm. I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
And that's a very strong 8.
Still. Yeah. Good. We disagree for once in a very long time. Yeah. But not by a lot. We both think you should definitely read this.
Yeah. If you're a sci-fi fan.
If you're a sci-fi fan, yeah.
Definitely.
Even if
you're not.
No, I tried. I tried pitching this book to non-sci-fi fans.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go well.
Okay. Yeah.
They just don't care about this stuff. Like if you're into like mystery thriller, whodunit crime stuff,
yeah,
this is not for you.
But if you were thinking of trying Asimov. Or trying classic sci-fi.
Or if you liked Star Trek TNG.
Yeah, if you like Star Trek,
this is a good book, yeah.
Like.
This is a good book, yeah. Yeah. I'm really happy I read this. And I'm probably going to read other books by this guy.
I'll recommend them. Read this short story first.
Yeah.
The Last Question.
Uh-huh.
Then maybe we pick up from there. Maybe you start Foundation from there.
We'll see. We'll see.
Foundation is long. Foundation is deep.
We'll
that's
see.
That's what these guys
see,
want to
again,
try.
For me, the book to beat
mm-hmm.
is Gardens of the Moon. That is literally the best book I've ever read. I'm a fantasy fan, I guess, more than sci-fi. Just that book is so good. For me, that's the book that needs to be beaten.
So this, not yet?
No.
But how close?
That one I gave a 9. This I gave a 7. No, a lot. A lot needs to change. No. Like, that book just, I couldn't stop. I just, and that's a big book. That was a big ass book.
Yeah.
So I couldn't stop, and I read the second part as well. So, yeah.
So now we're going to spoilers?
Yeah. So now, if you don't want to get spoiled, and you will get spoiled because, like I said, the twists are nuts.
Yeah.
In this book,
the big thing.
Like, there's a reason. I know what we've said so far isn't maybe the most compelling stuff, but the twists are nuts.
Yeah.
So if you are going to read this book, maybe don't listen.
Now.
Or if you're listening and you're into the spoilers and you realize at some point, okay, I didn't see that they were going to do that, stop listening and go check the book out.
Yeah.
Okay? So you've been warned. Spoiler time. Okay, so what was your favorite part?
My favorite part?
Yeah.
Westworld.
That reveal was insane.
God damn.
So again, if you're never going to read this book, the like after we talk about the scientists, we start talking about the parallel universe.
Yeah.
Which aren't even like humanoid anything.
They're nothing. They don't describe how
like,
they look.
They're
nothing.
Sort of like energy beings or amoeba. It's up to your imagination.
Yeah.
They're so removed from what, and they're two types of species on this planet. They're hard ones and soft ones.
Yeah.
Hard ones are unlike, different from the soft ones, but they're all part of the same species.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
But the soft ones, who are clearly the more primitive, are in like triples,
triads.
Yeah. They're not like couples.
Yeah.
They don't have gender.
Yeah, they don't have gender.
They don't have gender.
But they're locked. They're given
three specific
personalities.
Character. They fit into one of three functions.
Yeah.
They're either a rational, an emotional, or
a parental. Mm-hmm.
Which is like very psych 101
yeah.
class nonsense. But yeah, like they fit. They all fit one of these three things, and their sole job is. Like, they have these functions. So, the second part of the book is just about this alien family, this triad, and the issues that they have with each other in this parallel universe while all this other stuff is going on. It was so well done.
Yeah.
And then the twists now within that, where you, like, find out how the hard ones come about and stuff. For me, like, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that got me. Like, after we found out who Estwald is,
yes,
that reveal was amazing.
Yeah,
it was amazing. And then when he comes out, nothing.
It ends.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, like, what? Did he decide that he was going to stop the pump or send warnings? Like, no, nothing. Nothing. It's not,
yeah.
Nothing happens.
Nothing happened.
Ah. It was good. It was really good. For me, that part was wow. And then the third part of the book, which again talks about different characters,
and it's set on
takes
the moon.
Place on the bloody moon.
Yeah.
In during this time on Earth, where the electron pump is, like a few years later, where it's already been established, we're talking about the lunar colony that's been set up, and how the things on Earth have affected them. And, like, these are not random. They're all tied together in such a weird way. I just loved it, man.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, such a good book.
Like, even, okay, I really liked the description of now the parallel universe society.
You know what I thought? I thought it was taking place inside humans' bodies. I literally thought that all this stuff is going on within you.
Uh-huh.
And these are all like, the soft ones are like white blood cells, or like the hard ones are like red. This is what I had in my head. This is what I imagined.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not.
But it's not.
It's
yeah.
not, yeah.
So yeah, the three, that the whole triad thing.
Yeah.
Is, think of them as like amoeba. They're like fluid creatures.
Because
they take energy from the sun
yeah.
and whatnot. And they all have like different
things. Literally, you picture the amoeba boys
yeah.
from Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah, but only cooler. Somehow.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But more like alien in a Star Trek way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now how they...
There's a lot of banging.
Yeah, they merge
a lot. They bang
a lot.
And
the term that they use for like banging is called melting.
Yeah.
Because they melt into one another.
They go into each other, yeah.
Yeah. They fuse into...
And their job as soft ones is to create three babies who each fill
one of those roles.
And
then after once they're done with the three babies, they're allowed now to pass on.
To die, basically. Yeah. To die.
So the three of them will melt one last time. But then now once they do that final melt, they'll melt and form a hard one.
Yeah, which is the big reveal.
Which is the big reveal, yeah.
Yeah, because the other twist that was there was like, so these three in the triad, they're all like really different from all the other...
Of that kind.
Like, they're different from all the other rationals. They're different from, like, the rational in this group is different from all the other rationals. The emotional is different from all the other emotionals. And the parental is different from all the other parentals.
Yeah.
Parentals, normally, they are just instinct.
Yeah.
I need to bang and make babies. This is their primary driving force.
I need to make and take care of my babies.
And I need to look after the babies. I need to raise them. This is all that parental thinks about.
Yeah.
The emotional is supposed to just facilitate like good
melting.
Banging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Melting. Yeah. Melting. Yeah. Good melting. And
the rational's
job is to learn as much as possible. And yeah, just... I guess be rational.
Yeah, he's like the base.
Yeah.
The rational is like the base intelligence that the three of them will have.
Or eventually, right? Eventually,
yeah.
Right. So.
So it's in their best, it's in the rational's best interest to be as smart as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so with this group in particular, the rational is called Odin.
Yeah.
And he just loves learning. And he's recognized as being one of the best rationals, like
yeah.
the smartest ones. The emotional is called Dua, and she is the most erratic
emotional.
Like she just disappears for days. Like she's like, I've gone to the surface because I'm absorbing sun. They all feed on sunlight, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, all the soft ones feed on sunlight. So like, yeah, which ties into what the hell is going on with the parallel universe of humans. And the parental. The parental is instinct-based, but to a fault.
Yeah.
Like, they'll go out of their way to make sure that they bang. Like, even if it's stealing something, which is just weird.
Yeah.
In like, a hive mind kind of situation. You can also think of it like a hive mind kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because they're so driven. Now, the twist, one of the twists that's there is Dua is so erratic, right? She thinks that the hard ones created all the soft ones as robots, and they're all like programmed. Machines, yeah. Dude, I was like, what? I was like, what? Yeah, but then that's not true.
It gets explained. Yeah.
It's not true, yeah. And the reveal that they turn into Estwald, who is this hard one, this elusive hard one, who they all talk about. But no one had, like...
No one has any information
on him. The three of them have never met them, that guy, who is their leader. He's the leader of this entire colony. They end up being him. So the reason they've never met him is because they become him after they bang.
Yeah.
They become that entity. And so when they bang for the last time and all die, they're him permanently after that.
Yeah. They pass on and become Estwald.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, like, Dua is really... So Dua is sort of in line with the thinking that this pump for exchanging matter across the universes is a bad thing.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get the humans to stop, which is why she's sending the other scientists on the other side hints to stop pumping. Because their world will blow up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's where... I like that. Like... See, so it doesn't make sense. If they all combine into Estwald, what happened?
I don't know. For me, my
takeaway... Estwald was just like, nah, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. I guess. Because you see now, at that point,
You have the rational.
You have Odin there.
Yeah.
To temper that knowledge. Because he has all the knowledge of how the pump works.
Yeah.
Through Dua.
Yeah.
But for him, for Estwald... It's more of a matter of we kind of need this energy.
Yeah.
In our situation, because now their universe is cooling.
Yeah.
So they need to be in a situation where they can provide for themselves.
Yeah.
Right now, as their universe is dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But by using the pump, they're weakening their universe.
No, they're weakening our universe.
Oh yeah, they're weakening
our sun is getting hotter.
Yeah.
Our sun and will one day explode.
Yeah. Then
is the situation.
Yeah. But then now, for them, it made more sense that they'll keep using it. Because even in that time, even if the sun explodes, they'll still be able to get energy from us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for them, they don't care.
Yeah.
So if you do want to stop the pump, it has to be stopped from now, our side.
Yeah. From the human side, right?
From the human
side. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did like that part, but I wish that went into, like, what happened after.
Oh, yeah.
Because Estwald is just on my mind. So what did he do? What happened next?
That last note for me was trippy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then at the same time, they realize that they are Estwald. Wow.
Yeah, when they realize that they're Estwald, that was the trippy bit for me. That's when I was like, okay, these guys now don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they can't, because you know at that point you
they're
just
dead.
They're dead. So Estwald is gone. The new personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is always there somehow as well.
Yeah. But actually, one of my favorite parts in the story was the later part.
The stuff of how they resolve the thing?
No, when they're on the moon now. Because I liked the moon drama.
Dude, the culture is so dope.
Yeah.
Back to the writing, before I forget, the way Asimov writes like culture is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, if you like that, you'll really like Foundation.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll really, really like Foundation. Because he gets into the nitty-gritty of explaining how all these futuristic societies would live.
Yeah.
So that's the same thing that he does here with the lunar culture. So he talks about
lunar culture. Even the aliens...
Even the aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, I liked the lunar culture maybe a bit more.
Yeah.
Because it felt very...
Realistic.
Yeah, it felt very realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something that we've seen before.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you guys have... Okay, if you're interested, you should also check out this book called The Expanse.
That's a series.
It's also a series.
That's a series.
They do the same thing where they talk. Where he talks about... there's a lunar colony, the Martians, the Spacers. And it's kind of similar, but you can see now the origins of where that kind of
thinking came
from. So like now the lunar guys here, since they're not born in full gravity, they're all tall, they're lithe, Since you're on the moon, nothing sags, so you don't age as badly. They're very elegant. They're treated almost as if...
They're elves.
They're elves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the main character in now, the third part of the book, is called Celine. Now, she's my favorite character.
Yeah.
Now, Celine
she's
is...
She's dope, man. She's so cool.
Yeah. Celine is, like, super elegant and smart.
And everyone on the moon, by the way, is a nudist. Just
yeah.
Heads up.
Because clothes just get in the way.
Yeah.
Also,
why bother? Why bother?
Why bother?
We're not on Earth.
Yeah.
Screw your censorship.
And even they do like some weird things because like apparently when some guys on the moon remove their molars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need them.
So they only keep like the incisors.
Yeah.
Up until the canines.
Yeah.
Then they remove their.
They're kind of minimalist and like functional.
Yeah. No, it's also because like most of their food is mush.
Yeah.
So they don't need molars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's just going to cost them more to just maintain another set of teeth that you're never going to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that they're like, they're just, it's just different adjustments that these guys have made to live on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even small things like movement. Now there's this character in the book called Denison.
Yeah.
He appears very early on.
He's the hero in quotes of the book, I guess.
Yeah. He appears in the early, but then he comes back late in the third.
Yeah.
Part. So
he's one of the underlings who never got credit.
Yeah.
And was questioning stuff.
So you see his adjustment to lunar life.
Yeah.
Even to small things like movement, the fact that he has to go to the gym every day.
Yeah.
Food. Some guy offered him chocolate. He got so excited.
And then he's like, no.
And then he's like, no, if you do that, you're actually going to mess things up for me and it's okay.
Yeah.
I'd rather just live without chocolate.
Yeah. He's quite put off by Earth and its issues.
Mostly because of Hallam.
Because of now the guy who got credit for the pump.
Yeah.
And basically which shut anyone who had anything negative to say about the pump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, as his refuge, he ends up on the moon.
Yeah.
And while he's there, he decides to push research.
Yeah.
Into something that would counteract the effects of the electron pump.
Yeah, this guy isn't the main guy who's fighting Hallam on Earth, just to point that out. He's the guy who fought Hallam on Earth to prove him wrong failed.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, you should be listening if you're not looking for spoilers. But he failed. And this guy was familiar with some of his work, but he sort of went about proving Hallam wrong in a different way.
Yeah.
Which was to offer, like, an alternative solution.
Yeah.
Rather than present, this is a problem. What do? He works on a solution.
Yeah.
Which is what he does on the moon. And, my God.
I liked how we're being introduced to now lunar society through his eyes.
Dude, I look forward to knowing about now. This is now the start of space travel for humanity. Dude, what an awesome reveal.
Yeah.
Except, now you know the way the politics worked on the moon?
Yeah.
I didn't get the Baron.
Now, Baron...
He felt really shallow.
He was.
He seemed like he had a lot more to him when he's first introduced and stuff. Mm. But he's really just meh.
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 I want to be bad.
Meh.
Yeah.
And then, no, you can't be bad.
Okay.
But I'm bad. Meh. No, but you can't be bad. Meh. Okay, that's basically the end of the book.
Basically.
I didn't like that, yeah.
But the best thing, I think, for me... The reason why I picked Celine is because... I don't know whether that's how it's actually pronounced. Because in the book, it's pronounced differently.
No, it's...
Selene or something.
Yes,
like
Selene. Yeah, Selene.
Selene, sorry.
Right. And most women on... She even makes a comment. Like, most women on the moon get like, three or four different types of names. They're either one of or the others. So she's Selene... There would be Nina,
there'd
be Selly,
there'd be Lena,
So
now for her, the reason why I liked her the most is because she's introduced as, later, like halfway through that section where she is, she's introduced as an intuitionist.
Yeah.
Which is basically like someone with ESP.
ESP, but like high, I would say like... Not
I wanted to say psychic,
sort of psychic, but not quite. Like it's more like they're super intuitive.
Yeah.
They just don't know how. So like if they're faced, if they look at a maths problem, they'll know the answer, but they won't really necessarily know how they got the answer.
Yeah. And the reason why I liked her is because how it's brought out is through dialogue.
Yeah.
It's through her interactions with other people.
Yeah.
So all her dialogue, all the dialogue that she has with Denison, with Baron,
yeah,
is all indicative of the intuition that she has.
Yeah.
So you kind of see it when she's now problem solving with Denison.
Yeah.
So you'll like he'll bring up an argument,
mm-hmm,
and she'll give her
a solution, or
she'll give a solution without necessarily knowing what the solution is.
Yeah.
She'll come about it almost organically.
Yeah.
Then he'll know the math and the science of how to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like they work together, yeah, very interestingly.
Yeah.
So a case can be made for maybe having psychics in this kind of research. Yeah. So I don't know. I really liked that.
And then
the
again,
fact that she can just feel things and just know.
And then the politics again of how Earth was like, yeah, no, we can't do this. We can't have genetically enhanced blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and just
this decided. And that. And like them imposing rules on the moon, even though the moon is so removed from Earth that they're so completely different. Like, but all that stuff, it's very realistic.
Yeah, because like even the whole argument of bioengineering that they had in the book, yeah, it's the exact same thing that we're going through right now with CRISPR.
Huh?
There's a thing called CRISPR where you can bioengineer babies. You don't remember the like 2 or 3 Chinese babies that were made a year ago?
No.
Like embryos that they genetically engineered.
No.
Embryos.
No. Don't remember.
That's basically what's going on now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then, okay, the thing I liked even about Baron was the idea that he had that because of the, what is that, what was the engine, what was the thing called? The thing that they did, the thing that they built on the moon. The Cosmeg.
Yeah, the Cosmeg
The pump. Cosmeg pump thing.
Yeah.
I liked the idea that he'd use the moon as a spaceship.
Yeah. So, this was so random, dude. See, this is why I feel like Baron was just not flushed out for me. Like, his big bad plan of how, you know, yeah, let this guy make whatever he wants to deal with the pump. His big bad plan was to turn the entire moon, using the tech that's created, to use the moon as a spaceship to fly away from the Earth. This was his big plan.
But you see now, the reason why they made it like that is because, there's the electron pump that's on Earth.
Yeah.
That was popularized by this Hallam guy.
Yeah.
So Denison goes on to the moon and he pioneers a different kind of pump.
That sort of counteracts the effects
of the electron pump.
Which will stop the sun from exploding. And it also gives infinite energy and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But it also has like
its own weird drawbacks.
No, it also, yeah, it has to be in zero gravity.
In a vacuum.
And in a vacuum, and it has potential to move stuff.
Yeah.
Kinetic momentum, something.
Yeah, it can impart momentum on a body.
Yeah.
So the idea behind now using that pump,
yeah,
to power the moon,
yeah,
would also make the moon mobile.
Yeah.
So the idea for this was when the sun does blow up,
yeah,
let's say by the work of the electron pump,
yeah,
they'd be able to move the moon out of range.
No, no, no. The it wouldn't blow up because it would still be producing the stuff. This guy just wanted to move the moon away.
Yeah, like the time when you were saying that he wants to move it to like the orbit of Saturn out that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the time he moves it to the orbit of Saturn, the sun blowing up wouldn't be a threat.
Yeah.
That's what he says. But sorry, what were you?
No, and I was just saying the way, yeah, he wasn't fully fleshed out because he's saying all that, and then these guys are also giving him alternative ideas.
Yeah.
Because he's saying, I want to use the whole moon as a spaceship.
Yeah, you can just build ships.
You can just build ships, use the same drive, but smaller, and you can go as far as you want.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to out-accelerate the moon.
Yeah, because the moon will be too slow.
The moon will be too slow. So yeah, you'd rather just build a ship and then leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not telling you not to leave. Just don't do it with the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't make any realistic sense to do that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't see it.
He wouldn't budge.
He wouldn't budge. He was just being thick. Again, maybe it's part of the quote from what the book is based on. Against stupidity, the gods themselves contend in vain. Because we just have three stupid people in every story. Because Hallam is the idiot in the first one. In the second one, I want to say Trit because I can't stand him.
Oh, Trit was annoying, yeah.
I couldn't stand Trit. But it's them again as in general, it's Estworld. It's them as a group.
Yeah, yeah.
Who couldn't think beyond the the positron pump in the universe. Yeah. They couldn't think beyond the pump into what are the repercussions of this for us and for the people that were messing
Yeah, up. Yeah.
And then in the third one, I'd take it that maybe Baron is the one. Because all these guys, maybe their sin is they're too proud to realize that maybe what we're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I should point out that the way this pump works, again, ties into the way the title of the book. Because they're essentially taking energy from a universe that hasn't actually become a universe yet. Is how the cosmic pump works. Yeah. The new pump.
Yeah.
So essentially, they're going to drain that non-existent universe until there is a big bang. And then they'll just need to swap to a different non-existing universe.
Yeah.
But the implication is they'll create a universe by using the cosmic pump.
When then there's no proof that maybe that's already what happened
in our universe. Exactly, yeah. Right.
So maybe there's
I love that, though.
Yeah.
I love that. That was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. Like, I really did like the story because it forced me to think. It took me back to a place. Like, I haven't read sci-fi in ages.
Yeah.
Like, since I was, like, in my teens.
Yeah.
So this took me back to that time where it kind of forced you to think outside of this space, your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was nostalgic for me. That's why I'm going to score it an 8-9, though.
For me, it took me to Star Trek, and I feel like watching Star Trek. It's like, basically, I'm sure there was like a story like this. There are people that exist within our thrusters or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that story's been done.
Because it
felt like that.
So, yeah. I guess that's... Okay, by and large, if you're looking for an interesting sci-fi book to read, definitely pick this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is definitely worth a read if you're into sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like, remotely into sci-fi. And yeah, just what a good pick. I'm glad you picked this. I'm really glad you picked this. We needed a good book.
Also, yeah, and what's it called? If you're also looking into those short stories, check out the ones that I mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll go through them again. For Asimov, it's called The Last Question. For Clark, it's called The Sentinel. And Heinlein, it's And He Built a Crooked House. Cool. I don't know whether I can share them. But yeah, find them. They're really short stories. They're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 pages.
Yeah. So, dice roll.
Okay, yeah. So that's it. So, 7 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
Yeah. Okay. So, now we're going to talk about... We're going to decide the movie... I'll just tell you so that you guys know I'm not cheating. The movie picks are, if we roll a 1, we're watching a kung fu movie called Who Am I?
Yeah.
If we roll a 2, we're watching the new Shaft movie.
Uh-huh.
If we roll a 3, we're watching a movie called I Am Mother. If we roll a 4, we're going to watch Polar. 5, Rim of the World. And 6 will be Mowgli Jungle something.
Legend of the Jungle.
Legend of the Jungle, right. Yeah. The Netflix one.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So those are the 6 picks. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to use crit dice to roll. Let's see, D6.
1d6.
Yeah. A d6. So I'm rolling. And it is a 6. We're watching Mowgli.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we're going to watch Mowgli next time. Join us as we watch Mowgli. Legend of the Jungle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now maybe beyond that, if you want to now get a head start,
mm-hmm.
there are 4 games.
4?
Yeah, that I've chosen.
Yeah. Oh, for them to vote on.
Yeah, for guys to vote on.
Yeah, yeah.
You can... We'll put up all these options on Instagram and on Twitter.
Yeah.
So you can check them out from there.
Yeah.
But the 4 options that we're picking, or that I'm picking... Spec Ops: The Line, which is a shooter.
Yeah, which both of us haven't played. It's both not us, very new.
We haven't played this. It's not a new game, but neither of us have
played this game. It's on our list.
Yeah, it's on our list. So we'll take this opportunity to play it. So that's Spec Ops The Line. There's the Mega Man Legacy Collection.
The first one.
The first one.
Yeah.
Platformer.
Mega Man Classic. Yeah. Mm.
Then there's one called Mr. Shifty.
Yeah.
Which is like a top-down action game.
Yeah, it's... looks like a twin stick shooter-ish. I think it did really well on the Switch, actually.
Yeah. And there's another one called Dandara. Or Dandara. Dandara. That one.
Yeah. Dandara.
Dandara.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which... it's also a platformer, but it's gotten like really good buzz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It got lost amongst Celeste, really.
Yeah.
Last year when it came out, yeah.
Yeah. If do you have No Man's Sky?
No.
Okay, fine. Because I just started playing No Man's Sky and I just added that as an option.
I don't have it. I can pick it up if you want to.
No worries. We picked these four.
Ah.
So you guys can vote on these four on
Instagram. Whenever you see, yeah. We'll put up a post.
Yeah.
On Instagram, it will be a post. Just comment, like you're doing.
Yeah, just comment on the post. But we can also try and do a story.
Twitter does a really good poll. Instagram doesn't have that option.
No, on stories, you can do a poll.
The polls on Instagram are with two choices.
Mm-hmm.
You can only have two choices.
Yeah. Wait, you can't do more than...
No, you can do like a multiple choice kind of question-answer thing where you can have like four options. But it's more like you also have to pick a right answer, which is what I've been doing. I've been putting like the three picks and I always pick like one as the right answer, but really...
Okay.
I just look at who tapped on what. How many people tapped on what.
Okay, we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
the comments work.
You can do the comments on IG. You can follow the actual poll on...
The Twitter poll is really good.
Yeah.
But the comments on IG are also really good.
Yeah. So we'll tally both of them and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So thanks for listening or watching.
Yeah.
And join us next time and watch Mowgli.
Watch Mowgli, then we'll discuss that.
And we are recon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, have fun.
Have fun. This seems like it was a long episode.
Do you have an opinion on what we just discussed? Did we miss something? Tell us in the comments section and we'll read it in the next episode. If you're listening on Anchor, send us a voice message and we'll add it to this episode. Don't forget to follow our podcast on Twitter, @SpoilFans, for updates. And follow our Instagram for behind-the-scenes action, @SpoilersAndFandom. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube and Anchor to get the latest episodes.